Hey guys, welcome back to Unfiltered. Today is extra special because I have my favorite person on. Babe, say hi.
Hey guys, that would be me.
So I've been wanting to have you on for so long because you have a powerful testimony of just God's redemption. And today I want to talk about how you went from party boy to sold out to Jesus, unfiltered. So I guess the first question I would have for you would be, did you grow up always believing in God? Like, how did it start your relationship with God?
Grew up Catholic in Honduras. And it was just, a religious activity every Sunday to go to Mass and have lunch at my grandparents'. And that was pretty much it until we moved to the United States when I was 6 years old. Someone invited my mom to a non-denominational church, and we all got saved. My mom, my two older sisters, including my late sister, Yvette, and myself. My dad never really did, still really hasn't. He's still in our prayers, and God's, you know, God's got him. But from that point, you know, we all accepted Christ, and I loved Jesus. I learned to read from the Bible, Luke 4:18, where Jesus came to set the captives free and bring the good news to the poor and heal the sick. And that's where I felt like I was called to be a pastor or something. I was just so excited about the gospel, and I was just so filled with the Spirit as a young boy in Gainesville, Florida.
And this was when you were six?
6 years old.
So 6 years old.
And that continued up until my first time that I turned my back on God. I was kind of started summing it up, my testimony, where I was basically, you know, the prodigal son twice. And that's the story from Luke 15 for any of you that aren't Christian or just haven't read that story before. But it's a beautiful story. I was just hard-headed enough to go through it twice. Most people do it once, sometimes not at all.
So backtracking though, so you got saved basically at six. You get sold out for God. You're on fire for God. God speaks to you. You have a personal encounter with God. And then from that point, you're serving God until about what age do you feel like?
Middle school. Okay. Middle school is when So we moved back from the United States to Honduras after only 2 years up in Gainesville, and spent 4 years in Honduras. Everything was good. Church wasn't my favorite, but I had seen God's hand, and there was a time where we didn't even have anything to eat. My dad, he was supporting the family on a student visa salary. My mom didn't even know English. She didn't even have a driver's license back then when I was six and 7 years old. And I remember the neighbor, he worked for Domino's, and we were praying, and he just came over and brought us a pizza. And it was like, you know how much I love pizza. So like,
that's Guillermo's favorite food. Me, so he was like, there is a God.
Literally, like, for me, you know, God didn't just feed me. He gave me, you know.
It's okay. We're unfiltered like here.
He knows you. He knows you. And, that was one of the first experiences where, you know, looking back, I felt so, so special.
God heard your specific prayer, like.
Yeah, I wasn't praying for pizza, and, you know, I just remember, like, feeling so sad, because my mom was, she just seemed very hopeless that particular night. We just kind of ran out of food, kind of ran out of our budget. Like, she was cleaning houses, trying to supplement my dad's income. And it was a rough couple of years. But yeah, God was with us, and that continued all the way up until sixth grade, when we moved back to the United States after 4 years in Honduras. And that was just the biggest culture shock for me. So that's kind of where the enemy lied to me about being cool and you know, having all these clothes and shoes and looking like the cool kids that did. Because I went to like a really wealthy middle school, the area that I was zoned for whatever reason, just happened to be, you know, like the rich kids. And, you know, they all lived in these like mansions. And we're back to Gainesville on another student visa, you know, salary. And man, that was really tough, feeling like I just couldn't fit in, and I would get so angry with my parents, you know, because like I don't want to be in Honduras. It didn't matter what clothes you had, because I was fortunate enough to go to a private school. But now, so everybody looked the same every single day. Right. And on the weekends, you know, I was young enough to where all we did was go out and play soccer and basketball and ride our bikes and just be kids and dirty and sweaty. And, you know, nobody was trying to get wifed up. And, you know, I wasn't really thinking about girls. I mean,
I hope you weren't trying to get wifed up at sixth grade.
Well, yeah, I mean, nobody was, you know, we weren't really trying to impress girls.
Right,
we
you didn't have anyone age. To impress at
we
that time.
We weren't at that age yet. And even if we were, you know, it's like I said, we wore uniforms. I went to a private school, so I didn't stand out. I didn't feel like I was left out until the culture shock, coming to Gainesville, going to a public school, and the little bit of non-uniform, you know, apparel that I did have was just very basic, and that was just like my play clothes.
Yeah.
And so that was like very impactful for me. And so eventually from sixth grade to eighth grade, I got to the point where I was able to assimilate and get myself into like the cool kids group. But that meant, you know, running off into the woods during, you know, skipping class and smoking a cigarette, smoking a Black and Mild.
Like doing things to fit in.
Doing whatever I could to fit in. You know, they always would have these parties, these birthday parties. Oftentimes their parents weren't even there, or if they were, they didn't care. Wow. And they had full liquor cabinets. Somebody would always bring some weed. So that's when I first tried marijuana. I didn't get high till ninth grade the following year. And I was so high, my two friends that I smoked with must have thought I was just like the silliest person, because I couldn't stop laughing. I had the munchies. It was an interesting
experience.
Like,
this dude is weird.
Yeah, I know. THC and I don't really get along. It's not... it wasn't my preference, but again, that's what they were doing. So I wanted to make sure anytime that they were, you know, skipping school or after school going to smoke, that I was there. And, you know, and it became like, just very toxic in a lot of ways. I mean, I had to come up with money. I tried to work or find ways to chip in, because now, you know, now you're doing what the cool kids are doing, but if you're not contributing, then, you know, you're considered a mooch. And then it's like a whole nother level of not fitting in.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was all throughout high school, and until my senior year, was it senior year?
So before we go there, backtracking, like, you, I felt like most kids, you know, struggle with the desire to fit in. I've shared in my testimony how I also struggled with that, and I felt like I had to look a certain way to be accepted. Do you feel like there was something, like, you were missing at home that drove this, like, desire in you to just feel like you need to be accepted by these people?
I mean, at the time, you know, I would say no, because I had such great loving parents. Even though they weren't the wealthiest, they were always there. They always worked really hard. They were great examples of, you know, responsibility and hard work ethic. Both my parents became PhDs. My dad, the whole reason why we were in Gainesville, he was, that second time is he was earning his PhD at the University of Florida in Gainesville. My mom eventually earned her PhD in theology. So education, you know, they sacrificed to put us through private school in Honduras. And so everything they did, they, you know, they thought they were doing the best they could. And I thought they did a great job of just providing a safe home. Mm-hmm. Having both parents is, you know, more than people can speak of, that I later in life grew to really appreciate. And but I did feel kind of left out even in my home dynamic, because I had two older sisters and they were so close in age, they even, people even thought they were twins. You know, they look alike, they were like inseparable. And so they hung out and they had each other. And then my dad was kind of more withdrawn, but wasn't very emotionally, you know, involved and connected with any of us really. So I didn't really feel like I could talk to him about stuff. I didn't know to talk to anybody. And then my mom, she became the disciplinarian. Again, my dad was more laid back and withdrawn. So my mom kind of took charge of she would quit her dreams to stay home and raise us and sacrifice her career and basically raise us on her own. My dad would just kind of go to work and come back, but I was too scared to talk to her. You know, she laid down the law. I mean, she, you know, other than that was her, that was the biggest, her biggest struggle was, she almost overcompensated with the discipline as far as her anger issues, that I just thought it was normal for people to yell at each other on a daily basis if they were upset, if they were frustrated, if they were hungry, you know, fill in the blank. And, you know, that's obviously something she learned from her parents. She grew up being very emotionally, mentally, and physically abused. You know,
She was doing like the best she could. Like,
yeah, I mean, just to, you know, just to kind of paint the picture. I mean, she'd be up before school, milking cows and cooking breakfast for her other 8 siblings, because she was one of the eldest of 9, and that was all before school. I mean, I could barely get to the bus on time. Like, yeah. I had to run to the bus stop.
It's like a lot of responsibility for a kid.
It was much harsher for them back then, and so, you know, fast forward to her being a parent, you know, a lot of times she would take a lot of that out on us, and she would discipline us out of anger. And so that's come to affect me a lot, you know, in my adulthood, and without even knowing it, because up until our marriage, I just would run away. I would just, anytime things got too challenging and where I would, you know, get frustrated or someone didn't agree with something,
Peace out.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, all right, well, there's like 3.5 billion of you guys. Yeah. And at the time, you know, instead of dealing
with your issues, you're just like, you're the problem and I'm going
to,
you know.
Yeah, it's easy to be single. Yeah. It's easy to be single and not committed and kind of just.
You can just do whatever you want to do.
Do your own thing, you know, eat whatever snacks you want, watch whatever shows you want, come and go as you please. I mean, that's easy, but it gets lonely and it gets boring and it gets just very empty real quick.
So I guess, like, going back to, like, your testimony with, like, following God. So I guess, like, that's when you started losing your walk with God. You started now, like, okay, I gotta do all these things to be cool. You know, God's not cool.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to talk about God to people because that's not going to get me any cool points. And so you're starting to smoke weed, you're starting to drink, you're starting to hang out maybe with the wrong crowd, trying to fit in. And so when is it that you first really surrendered back to God? Like, how old were you?
21. I went to jail for about 30 days, from a fight.
And so that's what got you back to God. was going to jail.
Yeah, hit rock bottom. Oh, wow. That was like the first one of the two. And then for 4 years I was sold out to Jesus. And then that time of following Jesus, and I don't like to say believing in God, because, you know, I always tell you, like, even Satan believes in God. And, you know, how many people do we see on social media and just...
Well, it's one thing to believe in God, but then to follow God. Right. It's like...
I feel like being a true follower, a true disciple is one thing, and then just believing, you know.
Right. Like, I'm going to... There may be a God out there, but I'm still going to do what I want to do, kind of thing. I think that that's a lot of people's mentality. They aren't necessarily atheists, but they haven't, like, sold out to either side. They're just kind of, like, living for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I can believe marriage is good and, you know, not be married. I can be single.
Right.
And so there's no commitment. You know, there's no true walk. And for 4 years, I went from party boy, as you said. You know, I was a womanizer. I was never faithful to anybody. Just, you know... would black out drinking every single weekend, basically just live for the weekend when I was old enough. But even in high school, you know, I would get through school, I would get through sports. I played soccer my whole life. I would, you know, even hold down a job and just do whatever I had to do to get to the weekend. So then, you know, I can really be free and really,
like, let go, let loose.
Yeah, just partake in what all this world has to offer, which is the original lie that I believed when I thought that I just didn't fit in. I just, you know, I felt lonely and depressed. And so the enemy just kind of ran with that. And, you know, would always kind of tell me, you're still young enough, you know.
You have time.
If you go back to God now,
yeah,
it's gonna be born. You know, people, Christians are they're broke. You know, how many Christians do you see with like you know? I was a young typical guy who wanted.
This is just like what you're really thinking.
I wanted, like, you know, I wanted the Lamborghini and the Ferrari.
Yeah.
And you know, I grew up watching movies like Scarface and Goodfellas, where these men, you know, unlike my dad, they were like they had a very strong, powerful presence. They had money and businesses. Oftentimes, it was, you know, illegal.
They had whatever they want. Whatever.
A lot of it was just illegal activity as far as drugs and, you know, and those mobster movies. But yeah, they could do whatever they wanted. They had whatever, however much money they wanted to do anything, to be with anyone, to go anywhere, to drive, you know. So I thought that that was like the ultimate achievement. And I chased that for a long time until I got in trouble with the law. I was in jail for 32 days. They told me I was going to be in there for about a year.
Wow.
All I had was a public defender. Again, my mom came to the rescue. She's always kind of been that spiritual backbone. And
you went to jail for fighting.
Yeah. And just, it was just a really kind of like shameful, part of my dating life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I deeply regret. Because I pushed and slapped my girlfriend at the time. You know, it's not something I really like to talk about. You know, even now there's some paperwork, like applications.
It's like it still tries to follow you.
That I need to complete, and they ask for stuff, you know, and this was 20 years ago. You know, and it got to that point where I was just, so far gone into the things of the world, drinking, smoking, you know, sleeping around, just doing the dumbest things, making, you know, silly mistakes. I was drinking and driving.
Mm.
My first criminal offense was a DUI. I was 17 years old.
Oh, wow, that's young.
And, you know, I probably should have had 100. You know, I drove drunk every single night. You know, I mean, the Lord spared me from killing myself and tons of other people along the way. I mean, God forbid.
Yes, we do not recommend that.
No, please.
It's horrible.
Just, you know.
But you were just lost.
I was very lost. And take this as everything that you shouldn't do.
What not to do.
Yeah. So, like I said, I was very hard-headed. I've been through a lot of stubborn stuff. And God, you know, God got my attention when, you know, those 32 days. And he was able to get my mom, I think it was like $7,000 for an attorney that was able to get me out in 32 days. But it was going to be
a year.
It was a miracle. I was supposed to be in there a year. But I remember even then, when I came back to God, after turning my back on him the first time, you know, every night, so there's like little cliques within that particular jail system, and you're all kind of like in this one big pod with a bunch of bunk beds, and you got the bathrooms and everything is in one big room, and then we would go off into a little corner every night. We'd have like a Bible study.
Oh,
we'd
wow.
we'd do worship. You know, somebody would be doing beats and it was like, it was
and
just
everyone
church.
In jail would participate.
It was,
or
no,
just
it was probably
just a certain.
It's like 5 to 7 of us, just to be honest.
Okay. Wow.
But I started reading my Bible in the first book. So growing up as a Christian from age 6, I never really read the Bible. Like I don't think I read a whole chapter ever. I would just read a few scriptures here and there. We would pray with my mom, me and my sisters every night and read a little bit. And then, of course, on
church.
Sundays, Bible, you know, Sunday school when I was younger. And so that was the first book I ever read was Revelation in jail. And that put the fear of God literally and figuratively. But I was like, man,
I would
God.
Not recommend starting with Revelation as your first book.
Which
interesting is that was the first book I ever read when I became a Christian. And it definitely put the fear of God in me. And it was also like, wow, this is crazy. This is crazy stuff. It was hard for me to like comprehend.
Yeah. If you're a normal person, read John. If you're hard-headed like me, read Revelation. And because there's a lot in there about...
Yeah.
Just God's power and Jesus, his love, you know, and it's all a dream that actually John got from the Lord. But I got out and then I served. That was when I was really sold out for Jesus for 4 years.
Mm.
I went from this one extreme in the world to then I didn't even kiss or hold hands with a girl, which I know it's hard for you to believe.
That's really hard.
But I just did it. I just did it.
That's like real commitment to God.
I did it because I had gone from like, you know, the pit where like, you know, where the pigs slosh around and they're just kind of like at their lowest point, as you know.
Yeah.
Metaphorically speaking.
You are literally at rock bottom.
Yeah, where you're just... in the mud, just dirty and lost. And God was like, you know what? I'm going to take you from that. I'm going to redeem you. And I'm going to give you a fresh start. I'm going to give you a new heart. You know, the Bible talks about taking the heart of stone and making it a heart of flesh, which means like a heart that is alive and breathing and you know, just... soft and receptive to his love, to his grace, to his gospel. And so I was so grateful for his forgiveness. I was so grateful, not just because it's not like he makes the consequences go away. I mean, I'm still dealing with consequences now, but it's so much better with Jesus. Like it's, you know, if I go a day without praying, I'm at the point where like I ask the Lord, and so do you, apparently, to not leave me alone, to not give me peace, and to not let me stray away.
Yeah.
Because I've done it twice, and I've done it in major ways, which we'll get to shortly, but that was the first time. And then for those 4 years, you know, I really learned how to be a disciple, and which meant, you know, it's which meant giving God your first fruit. So when we talk about tithe, it's not just giving God your 10% of your earnings, which, you know, we do believe in wholeheartedly. It's all God's anyway. Like, all, everything mm-hmm. is God's. I mean, everything I'm wearing is literally free because my beautiful wife just takes photos of me and they send me like all these outfits every month. But it's all His, whether we used our own money or not. And so we give back 10% financially, but we also, you know, love Him so much that we want to give the beginning of our time, the best of our talents, the best of everything that He's already blessed us with. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I learned, you know, to pray, read the Bible, to and just start my relationship with God and really get to know Him and allow Him to not get to know me, but to pour into me, to speak to me, to guide me.
And like a foundation.
To mold me into, you know, who I am today. But then sadly, you know, after those 4 years, it happened again.
So what do you think, like, if you can think back, because I know this was some time ago, what do you think was like the lie that you were believing that, you know, the devil was telling you that made you go back to partying, drinking, you know, living for the world, like, because it's like...
So, there's a lot of lies along the way, but I think maybe loneliness was one, but I remember that it happened kind of throughout the course of a semester. All my friends during those 4 years, they happened to be starting college right around the same time.
Right.
And we all started attending the same church, First Assembly of God, which is now Greenhouse. And it was just like the most amazing 4 years as far as community. It was the foundation where God really discipled me to get me to where I am today. So then fast forward to the end of the 4 years, everyone graduated. Mm. And it all was just a little bit of a blur, but I was working at, so I worked my way through college, serving at Red Lobster. And I remember they all kind of graduated and they all left within the span of a semester or two. All my best friends were, you know, we would pray for each other. We would, you know, if we were struggling with something, we would text each other. And like, you know, my friend Nate would come and pick me up. I think I was a bit of a speed racer, and I had
not you
20 tickets. I had 20 speeding tickets within a span of 5 years, and they were going to revoke my license for 5 years, and I had to apply for a hardship license.
Oh my goodness.
I was able
to... You were trying to be like Fast and Furious.
Yeah, well, I had that type of car with the everything, the little body kit, the spoiler, the rims, the loud muffler.
Vin Diesel here.
Yeah, I thought I was like super cool party boy. And I was just a little legit punk, but...
So basically, like, what it sounds like is the second time, the thing that kind of led you astray was not having community, like isolation.
Yeah, community. And so, yeah, so they all graduated. And I remember clearly there was a couple, there was many invitations at work.
Mm-hmm.
If you're ever, you know, have been in the restaurant industry, and you're working the night shift,
right,
most people will go out and have a beer, which turns into, you know, 10, mm-hmm. On a nightly basis. And, you know, I just never had an interest. I mean, I went my whole college career, you know, serving God and being involved in the church. We did missions trips, just down the road to Immokalee, Florida, where there's mm-hmm. modern day slavery and just all kinds of stuff going on. And I just loved it. Like, I had so much joy serving God and getting to know Him. And then, and I was never going to accept an invitation to go out to a bar and drink. You know, I hadn't had a drink all 4 years. Mm-hmm. I hadn't, you know, committed fornication or anything mm-hmm. in 4 years. And I didn't even really think twice about it. But once they all left, the invitation started coming. And one night I was like, you know what? Yeah, why not? I'm tired. I'll just go have a beer. Or maybe I'll just go and just
hang out.
Eat something. Yeah, hang out, whatever. And I went. And next thing I know, I'm going again. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, so that was in January, I believe. And then spring break came around in March. And by then I was like, you know, stopped going to church, stopped going to Bible study, small group. And I got invited to go to spring break in Panama City. I did that. And I mean, it was just like...
So it's like little by little.
I mean, geez, I was 25 then. It took till about 35, 36, right before I met you.
Wow. It's like 10 years.
Before I rededicated my life to God a second time. After I turned my back on him.
So for 10 years, you're just partying.
Yeah.
Wilding out.
Yeah. And that second time, you know, I was a full-blown adult. The first time, I was still kind of a teenager. I was still living at home in high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before I ended up getting myself locked up for a month. But this time, you know, I had a full-time job. I had my own place. It was a lot easier to sin. It was a lot more convenient.
Well, and I think also, like, it's interesting in both of your, you know, times you strayed away from God, it was because of the crowd that you were hanging around with that was like influencing you. And like, I think that's why the Bible is so important, that God says, like, don't be unequally yoked with people. And like, we are supposed to share the gospel with people that don't know Jesus, but at the same time, it's like we have to also guard ourselves, especially with things we've struggled with in the past, like alcohol or whatever that is. Everyone has something different that they've struggled with. And it's just like protecting your heart and knowing like your boundaries of like, hey, like, you know, I know that when I hang out with, you know, Jim, then I'm tempted to do this. So maybe I shouldn't hang out with Jim, or I shouldn't go there. Like, just knowing yourself and knowing your struggles, your temptations, I think is important. And just, yeah, so it's just interesting how like the crowd is kind of what led you away from God. So now let's talk about how you came back to God and how I dragged you to church.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I love to tell this story that I am the one that dragged him back to church.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not really all true, but there is some truth in it.
Yeah. The little angel Barbie here dragged me to church. I was this...
5'3".
I was this, you know... cheap sinner.
No, but I did invite him to church. When we first met, I was going to Grow Church, and I was like, you know, if you're gonna date me, like, I would like you to come to church with me. I didn't say it like that, obviously. I was just like, you know, do you want to come to church with me or something like that? Yeah. Right? Is that what happened?
Yeah, no.
You have a better memory than me, honestly.
Well, I'm trying to remember, but yeah, no, I was, obviously, had gone through my heathen season and, bought into the lie again that, hey, you're still young. Hey, if you follow God, you're going to be broke. You're going to be poor. You're going to be bored. You know, you're going to end up marrying Plain Jane, and, you know.
Which I am far from Plain Jane.
No,
let's just be honest.
you're the best, sexiest wife ever.
Oh.
And, you know, have a million qualities that I didn't even put on my list that I didn't even know I wanted. But I got so much more. Mm. And, again, that's the God that we serve is we don't deserve... really anything.
Yeah.
I mean,
but But the devil just was lying to you, like, basically, like, if you do follow God, your life isn't going to be fun. You're not going to be able to have, like, a pretty wife. Like, I don't know why. Like, sometimes I guess the devil tries to say, like, Christians aren't beautiful, or they're boring, or they're not trendy, or whatever. Like, I mean, I think that that is a lie that a lot of people believe, unfortunately.
Yeah, he wanted to put a lot of fear in my heart and in my mind, mm-hmm. to go back to my Creator, who,
yeah.
you know, who fearfully and wonderfully made me in the likeness and image of God. And it's not even about the earth suit that we have. I mean, we're so blessed to be healthy and mm-hmm. strong, and you know, you got blessed with a lot of good looks and sexiness, and you know, so God definitely spent more time on you there. To quote a little Justin Timberlake, "Cry me a river." But
But I also think, like, what's interesting is, like, how the devil operates. Of, like, you know, he tells you these lies, but then, like if you know, if you be a Christian, you're gonna live a boring life. You're not gonna have fun. You're basically, like, you're not gonna be fulfilled, right?
Yeah.
But you're living this sinful life, and you're still not fulfilled. So it's like he lies both ways. Like, it's like he tells you, like his promises, like they don't actually promise. They don't come through. Like, he promises you you'll have fun, it'll be awesome, you know, you'll get to do whatever you want. But it's like you do it and you're like, why don't I feel like fulfilled?
Yeah, exactly. And so he manipulates you to the point of destruction, you know, mm-hmm. because that's what the enemy's here to do, is to...
It's like he puts a mask on.
Steal,
really.
Kill, and destroy.
He bamboozles you.
He really does. And I mean, you know, I would like to think that I'm a smart individual, but...
You're very smart.
But I mean, when it came to 20 plus years of my life, he did bamboozle me, and I did believe the lies that, you know, it's not appealing to be a mm-hmm. Christian. You know, I just wanted to have fun. I wanted to have a hot wife like you. You know, maybe a few.
I mean,
maybe a couple of them until I realized that one.
We're not back in
until
the
I
thing.
Realized that one is more than I'll ever need. I'm more than satisfied.
Maybe that's even a lie that a lot of men believe, though, is that one woman cannot satisfy them.
Well, I mean, the Bible does talk about, you know, the eyes are never satisfied. I think that goes both ways. You know, I think men and women lust. Mm-hmm. I think not just sexually, but for money, for clothes and purses and cars and houses. And I mean, we live in Naples. There's opulence all around
us. I think it's just when you just live by the flesh, regardless of what it is, it's never enough. I mean, it's just never enough.
Exactly. And I mean, and I went back a second time just to make sure and see if I had missed something.
Let me double check, make sure there's nothing else left.
No, I literally believed the lies so much that I went back a second time, turned my back on God. And, you know, I say this with just like the utmost gratitude and respect and you know, I mean, I don't even have words, because at any point, so I was involved in 3 car accidents, and then at birth I almost died. So the enemy tried to take me out when I was born. I was 10 pounds. I was a big fat baby.
I was 9. We were both fat babies.
I was born.
We need to start praying for her.
Yeah, but I was born feet first. So not only did I almost die, I almost asphyxiated on my way out. I almost killed my mom. And so that was a miracle that we both lived through that.
Wow.
Then in Honduras, my dad was driving this kind of old beater car. His brakes went out, going around a mountain, downhill.
Dude, those mountains on those islands are scary.
He stopped, like, right at the edge of a cliff. Like, he was pumping the brakes. I remember it like it was yesterday. We veered off the road mm-hmm. where we're hugging the mountain, and we're going downhill so fast, and there's just like trees, like, and me and my sister's in the backseat, like, oh my God. And my mom's in the front seat yelling,
I can just imagine your mom.
Yeah, Michael Scott is, we'll tell you about Michael Scott another time, but she was freaking out.
That's a little inside joke we have.
It was a little bit terrifying. Mm-hmm. And then the second time, my friends were driving after a high school game where we flipped the car, landed in the creek. One of my friends woke up with a hole in his head. We had to rush him to the ER. Goodness. And thank God he lived and he was okay. And then the last time I was driving and I rolled the car like four times, I had drug money in the trunk. Just the stupid stuff that I mentioned that I was doing, mm-hmm. believing the lie that like it was all about money, respect, women, cars, you know, parties and traveling, having fun and all this stuff. And none of that satisfied me. Mm-hmm. So I believed the lie the first time, came back to God. And then I turned my back on God again a second time, mm-hmm. just to make sure that I didn't miss out on any of what the world has to offer.
Just in case there's anything else, I can get myself into trouble.
Well, it was not even so much trouble. It was under the disguise of fun. Mm. It was under the lie and the facade.
I'm not gonna have fun.
Of you know, YOLO, get rich and die trying, like even Jesus, you know, the enemy tempted mm-hmm. him.
With the pleasures of the world.
With you know, I'll give you all the kingdoms if you just bow down to me. And I literally bowed down to the mm-hmm. enemy by turning my back on God, by, you know, I hurt a lot of people along the way, just lying, just, you know, drinking and doing dumb stuff and you know, the stuff I would say, I'm sure, not just even when I was drunk, but just like, just living without God's love and without his joy, without his compassion. Because even now, that's my biggest struggle. Thank God he delivered me from all the alcoholism, all the sexual immorality. I mean, we haven't had a drink in like 3 years. And that's what I would like to go back to.
So how did that become possible? I mean, you go from being party boy, you know, two times, living for the world, doing all this crazy stuff, driving like fast and furious, mm-hmm. just doing whatever, living a crazy party boy life, to now serving God, and maybe people see like who you are now, and it's like almost even hard to believe that you're this person now. Like, what would you say was, like, the main turning point for you to really be sold out for Jesus once and for all? Like, just really give it a real shot.
I think it helps to have a mom who prays and intercedes for you. Mm. And
yeah, your mom's a prayer warrior. She doesn't play.
Yeah. And moving to Naples was huge. I didn't know anybody, didn't have any family. Mm-hmm. One of my sisters had passed away from cancer. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to be closer to Michelle and you know, her daughter, Gabby, in Miami. There was nothing suitable for me as far as work opportunities there, but there were a couple options in Naples, so I mm-hmm. came and checked it out. The first two didn't work out and I was ready to move back. And then I ended up where I'm at now, doing property management, and it's been great ever since. But that first year was a struggle and I was still a little bit unsure, but I, you know, it's paradise here. And
yeah,
and I love,
it's so nice.
I love the weather. I had a feeling that this is where I needed to be, but I wasn't like full blown into the worldliness and living that super sinful life, but I wasn't sold out for Jesus. I hadn't fully rededicated my life to God to where I'm at today until the little angel Barbie dragged me into church. No. But when we
I didn't make you, but you were very, when I did ask you, you were very willing to go. And I mean, yeah, you knew the Bible. You had, you know, it wasn't,
I mean,
just
I've been
like,
a Christian like three
yeah,
times.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it was
I can't take credit for your salvation.
It was, you're going to get some crowns. You're going to get some crowns.
Some jewels in heaven.
On your some jewels on your crown, not just for inviting me back to church, but just the huge impact you've had in my life and the life of so many others. But yeah, thanks, so when babe. We met after that first year, I was what you would call low-hanging fruit. So it was just ready right there. And like, I'm sure there's so many of you even listening now or people that you know where they're just so ready to just, hey, Jesus loves you. Would you like to come to church? You know, we have a great church, or we have this event, right, or we have this Bible study.
Like, they've been feeling low.
Right there. I was right there. I was at the kind of the end of my rope as far as like, okay, like how dumb
am I? Also, you were getting older too. You're how long are you gonna believe the lie of like you just need to be, you know, you're young.
I mean, have you ever been to Mercado and seen 50, 60, 70 year olds like dancing?
Just,
thinking that they're that they're like
they think they have the time.
Jersey Shore in their 20s. You know, I didn't want to get stuck in that in that bachelor life,
right,
and not have a family. I've always wanted to have a family. So thankfully things worked out with us. So after that first year when I met you, that's when like God really started to show me, hey, I had a greater purpose for you, even though you didn't know anybody, you didn't have any family here, your first couple work things didn't really work out. You were ready to move back to Gainesville and just like the Jacksonville, Orlando area where I pretty much lived my adulthood. Then that's when we met, and we did have a lot. Most of our conversations were Christ-centered. You know, we talked about our previous marriages, you were the first person. You were the first woman that I was just honest with about like from the beginning. And I've even, you know, shared stuff with you that I'm not going to share with you guys now, but
that's another, we can do another podcast on like just how we met and
but that's where, you know, that's where I was just ready to say yes and like, oh, this is exactly what I've been looking for. You know, like if you would have invited me to go have a drink, I probably would have said yes, because I was like so attracted to you. And, you know, I just thought you were just so sweet and funny and amazing. But, you know, the fact that you have such high standards and just like carry yourself, you know, with such class and dignity and respect for yourself, I was like, that's my wife.
And I think he was testing me too, because he even made this, I don't know, like sexual joke and very early on, and I was just like, shut it down, and I was just like, don't joke with me like that. Like, I don't remember how I said it, but I probably came off kind of just like rude maybe, but I was just kind of like not playing.
I
can be a little intense sometimes, I think, when it comes to just my boundaries or what I want.
You intense then. And no, but that was very attractive to me in, from the standpoint of, okay, she really knows, you know, who she is and what she wants and has standards. Like, she's not just like one of these other girls that you go out on the first date and hook up with them and or they just want you to buy them dinner. You know, like I took you to Narrative Coffee, you know, and
which is my favorite, like coffee is my favorite thing. Yeah. So.
And so I had the inside scoop from her friend about the coffee thing, and and that's where she fell in love with me. But
it wasn't just that. You had, you know, and we can talk about that more in another podcast, but you had a servant heart from the beginning, just pulling my chair out, asking if I needed a straw. It was just like little things that like I noticed like were different about you. That was really attractive to me, because like I think in my mind and in my past, like women are just supposed to serve men and do all these things for men, but it was like you were doing that for me. And I think it was because you're so close to your mom and your sisters, and I noticed you treat them like that. Like when we're with them, you serve your mom and you do things for her and your sisters, and that is just very attractive to me, just how you look out and care for them. So
yeah, and I think that that's part of our culture as Latinos. I know we get a bad rap about being, you know, fiery and loud.
I know. I have friends that tell me, they're like, I would never date a Latino, even then, though they're Latino.
And then the whole cheating thing, which, yes,
so it's like, not everyone did that,
you know, prior to surrendering my life to Christ, like, for real, this third and final time. I'm never turning my back on God again. Those were the biggest, you know, mistakes and regrets mm-hmm. of my life. But it also helped me see, you know, how much grace there is. You know, it's mm-hmm. just like, I've always been a boundary pusher. And I think that kind of plays into, you know, the prodigal son.
Like, how far can I go?
Times two.
Which a lot of people, when they come to Christ, I even get people asking me, well, like, what do you really think is a sin or not a sin? Like, you know, there's a lot of, like, well, the Bible isn't clear about this. Like, they try to push that boundary, you know?
Yeah.
Pretty common.
And I think the ambiguity also, you know, is very genuine as far as, like, mm-hmm. you know, wanting to please God and yeah. wanting to be obedient but not knowing exactly. It comes down to the heart, you know? Yeah. Because even the whole drinking thing, which, you know, we can get into some other time, but... the Bible doesn't say, hey, thou shalt only have two drinks and then, you know, right. you're good. It's your heart. You know, Jesus turned water into wine. So people like to be on either extreme. Oh, well, if yeah. you did that, that means I can drink. But also it says, do not get drunk on wine.
Right.
And so for me, I would never go back to drinking, especially not to the scale. Like, would I have a Corona or something someday? Sure, maybe. But I've already kind of made that decision not to. Because I just don't even care for it anymore. I don't have that worldly, fleshly desire anymore. Cause I'm so far removed from it. 3 years now, my circle is completely different mm-hmm. than who I used to hang out with.
Which makes the biggest difference,
you know,
but I also think too that, you know, because I also wrestled with this, like, okay, is it a sin to drink? You know, I can be very extreme in my personality, and I'm like, you know, I know in the past, like, I was similar to you. I was never, like, really deep into alcohol, but I would drink, and I am the type of person, like, I know myself where I can't just have one. Like, I need more than one. I always feel like, it's like with cake. Like, it's hard for me to just have one slice of cake. Like, I want the whole cake. Like, so God's working on me with that, but I think, like, it, like we were talking about the other day, it's not good to be on either side of the fence where you're now, like, legalistic and you're, like, anyone who drinks is a sinner and doesn't serve God. Or, you know, you're just, how do we say this, legalistic or liberal, where you're just, like, you can drink, you can do whatever. Like, God loves you. Like, it's like you want to be balanced. And I think that that's been hard for both of us. But it's because of also, like, our past, and we know ourselves and we know our struggles, so we are just choosing to not drink because it has not led us to healthy places in the past.
Yeah, so, you know, so I'm really thankful that, you know, that I moved here, and it took a year for us to meet
mm-hmm.
but that's when God started kind of showing me the bigger picture. You know, we've been married 2.5 years now since then. And I thought, oh, okay, well, now that I'm, like, you know, completely honest with Danielle, you know, I've been faithful to her since day one. You know, I don't even look at other women as far as, like, you know, ever having, like, a thought about them, like I used to before, where, you know, everything was permissible.
Hmm.
And then, you know, and my flesh would partake in anything that, you know, that I could or was available. And now, you know, I have so much more joy, living a life that, I just have peace with, like, with one woman that satisfies me beyond, like any amount of mm-hmm. you know, random encounters, you know, could ever combined.
In every
sense of the mm-hmm. Of the word, because it's not just sexually, but it's like, you know, emotionally, you're the only woman I've connected with. and like I said, have shared things that I haven't even told my mom or my best friend. And so, like, for you to love me back despite those things, and for you to see me at my worst, you know, when my Latino genes kick in, and you know, we're talking about marinating a steak, and then, you know, next thing you know, I'm like full blown yelling about nothing. It just shows me the love of God continually every day. And then especially when you're able to apologize about your role, you know, before I can even say anything. And that's why I choose to not refrain from pleasures, because sin is pleasurable for a season, but because there's just so much more, you know. And even though if we combine 20 years of the pleasure and all the worldliness and just parties, you know, like I've been VIP everywhere in Miami and whatever, you know, things that, like, you know, clothes, shoes, I've had every pair of Jordan, right, and, you know, all that dumb stuff that we see on social media, it means nothing. It's so empty compared to, you know, the love of God and the love of a wife that really actually knows me. So
I think it's important to note too that when you become a Christian and really live for God and you're sold out, that, and I talk a lot about this on my podcast, that not all your problems or your, so to wrap things up, because we've been talking for a while now, what would you say is the number one difference now in your life when you were, you know, far away from God to now living for God? And what would you tell people maybe listening who are struggling, like thinking that they have time or they can just, you know, maybe love God, but then just choose, you know, the world and the sins of the world? Like, what would you say to that?
I would say peace and gratitude. Especially if you're someone who not just believes in God, but you have followed Jesus, you have lived for him, and then maybe someone hurt you at the church. I mean, let's just be real. You're going to get hurt at the church.
Because it's people.
You're going to get hurt at the grocery store. You're going to get hurt at home.
Yeah.
You're going to get hurt anywhere you go. If there's not a dog there, but there's a human there, you're going to get hurt. You know, only our little Chihuahua is probably the only living being that hasn't hurt me. In some way, shape, or form, we can all relate to that. So it's not worth living for the world, and you know, the peace and the joy and the love that that I have now, not like my problems all went away, and right, like you mentioned, the consequences don't go away. You know, we're sorting through some consequences now of both of our pasts and both of our, you know, backgrounds and traumas.
That's true.
Especially when you come together with someone else and you've made the decision to stay committed and to not run away, because it was super easier when I could just run away, right, because I didn't care about the other person as far as, you know, seeing a future with them and wanting to be with them and start a family with them, you know, like I do with you. So
and you can hide things from people for a certain amount of time, you know, but then when you're with someone for so long, like, they see the real you. They see all the flaws and everything that you are still working out with the Lord.
Yeah. So the peace and the gratitude of knowing that my name is written in the book of life, and that anything short of turning my back on God again, blaspheming against the Holy Spirit, which is a whole other conversation as well, and are essentially the same thing, but choosing to follow God every day, choosing, you know, to love him, to love you, you know, to just be a responsible businessman and treat, you know, love others. It's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah.
You know, especially anytime you have to work with other people and they have their bad days and they get hangry just as much as I do. But I just have so much gratitude for God's grace and His mercy to not let me die in any of those car accidents, to keep me and protect me, to give me chance after chance after chance. But what I want to make sure I emphasize is that you, today may be your last chance. And I don't want that to be like a...
like you never know when your time is.
Yeah, I don't mean that from like a hell and brimstone, fire and brimstone, right. You know, fear tactic. But my sister was a lot like you. I always tell you, she reminds me of you, just a beautiful, sweet personality and just, you know, just an amazing heart and you know, beautiful inside and out. And she passed away at 36. She told us she was sick on a Monday and or Tuesday was the last time we heard from her. On Friday, my other sister drove over to an apartment in Miami and found her dead. And I got that phone call, and I'll never forget.
It's like unexpected.
It's just, it's tomorrow is never promised. And I have so much gratitude that I went 20 years of back and forth with God, and yet I'm still here to tell about it. So I'm going to tell everyone, and I'm grateful that, you know, not only did you bring me on your podcast, but I'm also your favorite person. Sometimes, you know, we, in marriage, you get into disagreements, and you think the other person doesn't even like you. But I'm so lucky to...
I mean, sometimes I think that in marriage, it's normal to not like your spouse.
No, for sure. And
love them, but not always like them sometimes.
Yeah, and so, but it's, but I say that to say that I'm very fortunate and privileged to do life with you, and it's an honor to be on the podcast and be able to share my testimony and what God's done, because if you're breathing right now, then it's an opportunity to say yes to Jesus, to walk with Him. And to know that whatever happens to you, if He calls you home today or if He comes back today, that you're good. You have nothing to worry about.
Right. Like you said, you have peace. That your relationship with God. Well, I'm so glad that you're on my podcast and there's so many more to come. I guess we can just close out in prayer if you want to pray for maybe people out there that are lost and... maybe they once served God, but now they're kind of, you know, living for themselves. Just to pray for them, for God to give them strength and wisdom to really come back to Him.
Yeah, I'd love to. Father, we pray Your kingdom come and Your will be done with this podcast on earth as it is in heaven. That everyone listening, no matter where they're at and when they listen to it, that You will speak to them, that these words will be anointed with Your love, Your truth, Your kindness, Your grace, Your power, God, to, you know, not to draw attention to ourselves, but to point people to Jesus, and that You died on the cross for their sins, their struggles, their, you know, all the challenges and the trauma, Lord. Like, you know, we can't explain why people go through, you know, childhood abuse and just, you know, poverty and so much like death and destruction and just evil around us, but we know that You are good and that You love every single one of us because You created us in Your likeness and in Your image. So I pray a special blessing over everyone of prosperity, protection, Lord, and just soften our hearts to receive Your word, Your gospel, Your love and Your truth, and continue to open our eyes to, you know, to what You have for our lives and the plan and the destiny that You have for each and every one of us, Lord. We need You desperately, and we pray You would fill us, Holy Spirit. In the mighty name of Jesus, amen.
Amen. Well, thanks again, babe, for being unfiltered with us. And if this was encouraging to you, we just ask that you share it, leave a comment, and we'll talk to you soon.